Welcome to Junior, Sportsnet CHL Podcast with your host, Jeff Merrick.
At the beginning of the season, there were 60 hopeful CHL teams all looking to punch their ticket to the trophy described as the hardest to win in all of hockey, the MasterCard Memorial Cup. Some checked out early, realizing this wasn't the season for them. We had controversy in Flint, injuries in Vancouver, and a rebuilding in Halifax. In the West, teams like the Lethbridge Hurricanes overcame expectations and did damage. The Regina Pats had a surprising playoff run. How about the Victoria Royals, the Seattle Thunderbirds? They were the class of the U.S. teams. Meanwhile, in the queue, Val d'Or looked like a Memorial Cup favorite until meeting up with a Florida netminding prospect named Samuel Montembeau. Took a while, but the St. John Sea Dogs, they finally got things figured out, and they had a nice run. In the Ontario League, the Erie Otters almost went wire to wire as the top team in the CHL. Their bench boss, Chris Knobloch, winning Coach of the Year in the process. The Kings and Frontenacs loaded up and enjoyed the best season in franchise history. Speaking of loading up, the Sarnia Sting pulled off a huge deal that shocked the entire junior hockey world, picking up Flyers first-rounder Travis Konecny in the process. But now we're down to four. The host Red Deer Rebels, who played without top defenseman Josh Mahura for pretty much the whole season, save a couple of games, pulled off the biggest deal at WHL trade deadline, bringing in Bruins first-rounder Jake DeBrusk from Swift Current. However, they bowed out in the Eastern Conference Final against the Brandon Wheat Kings, but not before beating both Calgary and Regina in the process. Speaking of Brandon, they endured an early scare at the hands of the Edmonton Oil Kings, only to come back and win four games straight. They arrive at the MasterCard Memorial Cup, having dispatched Moose Jaw host Red Deer and the Western Conference champion Seattle Thunderbirds all in five games. The London Knights had a first-round scare of their own at the hands of the Owen Sound Attack, who were the only team to beat the Knights in the playoffs, taking two games away from the team in green. From there, it was all sweeps for London, with the Kitchener Rangers, Erie Otters, and Eastern Conference champion Niagara Ice Dogs all falling victim to Mitch Marner and company. Rouyn Noranda, the Huskies, by the end of the regular season, recognized as the top team in the country, and for good reason. A powerhouse before the trade deadline, they only got stronger, adding Sharks first-rounder Timo Meier and high-end defenseman Nicholas Briard. They beat Drummondville, Blainville, Bois-Briand, Moncton, and Shawinigan to get to Red Deer. And here we are. The action starts Friday with host Red Deer Rebels taking on the OHL champion London Knights. Saturday, it's the Rouyn Noranda Huskies taking on the Brandon Wheat Kings. The MasterCard Memorial Cup has finally arrived. Welcome to Junior. And with that, we welcome in our co-host of the program here each and every week on the podcast, Sam Cosentino, lead analyst for the CHL on Sportsnet. Not that long away, Sam Cosentino, we're finally arrived here, 2016 MasterCard Memorial Cup. And I got to tell you, it sounds like I say this almost every year, but man, this year more so than ever. With all due respect to Red Deer, who are probably going to have a tough time, this field looks stacked. The Huskies, the Knights, and the Wheat Kings. These are some powerful teams this time around, Sammy.
Well, similar teams, I think, Jeff, and they're in similar in their depth and similar, especially in the playoffs, in their kind of resiliency and their effort. Now, you know, real resiliency, let's talk about Brandon first of all, okay? Yeah. Really challenged a little bit in that first round, but it was a wake-up call after they had lost two games in Edmonton and then lost once in the Moose Jaw, once in the Red Deer series. You know, and then, of course, Seattle came back and thumped them in game four of that series. But really, that one little test each series, I think, will serve them well. But in those games, you know, that I watched, especially in the Seattle series, you could see their depth come to the fore about midway through the game and really take over. I mean, the first game, they outshot Seattle 10-0 in the overtime and ended up winning and got a lucky bounce in game number two. But I really like their depth, their resiliency, and the fact that from about the halfway point of the game on, they played extremely well. And then I look at the Rouyn Noranda Huskies. It's very much the same in terms of their style, in terms of their makeup, in terms of their resiliency. A pretty easy time in round number one against Drum, and then ran up to a bit of a challenge, and it was very good challenge for them in the Blainville Bois Brienne series, and a team that had to play with structure, had to play a defensive style of game, and force Rouyn-Noranda to make some adjustments to allow them to get through that series, and then were pretty good thereafter. I think in the championship series against Shawinigan, they got beat there one game too, just a little bit of a wake-up call, but were able to take things on home ice. In the game that we did is the same sort of thing I noticed. You know, they got into a 2-1 situation, just kind of kept hanging around, really had some great puck possession numbers in the second half of the game, and, you know, used a little Chase Marchand to close it out. And then I look at the London Knights, where they too, similar to Brandon, had great challenges in that first round against the Owen Sound Attack. In fact, that was the only two losses they experienced. And I thought in game six of that series, where they gave up a power play goal, did Owen Sound, late in the second period, and that really allowed London to kind of take flight from there. And so from that point on, to me, they've been absolutely outstanding. But it's the same sort of thing, Jeff. They have that depth, good puck possession numbers, play really well in the second half of games on, and they wear you down with their talent and with their depth of talent. So when you talk about those three teams having very similar elements to them, it should be awesome in the way it sets up for those three teams. Red Deer, a bit of a wild card here. Yes, they do have depth. They're going to have to play much more of a straight line brand of game, where they're in the forecheck, where they're bumping bodies and getting pucks to the net from any angle, because the other three teams did a really good job at limiting their opponents in shots on goal. I don't think Red Deer's depth Red Deer's talent has the same sort of depth as the other three teams. Yet, their back end is pretty good, although it did get exposed in the Brandon series, and they're going to be facing those challenges against these three hockey clubs. You have to think that Ryland Toth's got to be feeling better in goal after coming back from the injury in the final series, but from my understanding, he did need more time to kind of get up to speed. So they're kind of the wild card in this whole thing, because you have three teams that are really good, that are really similar in their depth and their talent, and then you have the Red Deer Rebels, who I don't think are as deep with their talent pool, yet still, when you look at Jake DeBrusque, first-rounder, Hayden Fleury, first-rounder, you go up and down the list. Adam Haluka's had an awesome time of it. Josh Maher is a guy who's going to need this as a proving ground for the draft. So it does provide a real interesting element with, the home team and the host team kind of being the wild card team in all this.
I'm curious about the power versus power as well. And with the three teams that earned their way in, London, Brandon, and Rouyn-Noranda, when you look at some of the high-end power offensively from the forward units, it's staggering. And I don't know where you're at on this one. I'll put it out there for you, Sammy. The line of Quenneville, Magali, and Duke, I mean, that's a huge one for the Wheat Kings, to say nothing of Coulter, Patrick, and Haraluk, which is their, I guess, number two line. You couple that with the line of Dvorak, Marner, and Tkachuk, who have been doing damage all season long for London. Then you have Francis Perron-Julien and Nantel and Timo Meier with Rouyn-Noranda. What do you see as far as differences, if any, between these three top lines for these powerhouses?
Not a whole lot different in terms of the top lines. And then the second lines, you're going to see a little bit of variance. But where the difference and likely what may go a long way in deciding this tournament is what you see on the third line. And these coaches, Brandon's pretty much held true with its line combinations. Rouyn-Noranda tends to mix things up just a little bit because they come into games really with 11 and 12 forwards and tend to go the seven defenseman route. So, they have some mixing and matching when it comes to their second, third, and fourth lines, and the same thing can be said about the London Knights when it comes to their third and fourth lines, and that's probably where this thing's going to be decided. But when it comes to those top lines, really, there's not a lot to give away. You're talking about lines that have first-rounders. You're talking about lines that have, great talent, great centermen, great depth. I will say this, though. There is no line in this tournament like the line of Marner, Tkachuk, and Dvorak.
Yep.
With all the points they put up near 350 in the regular season, 120, I think, in the playoffs for London. So there is no line in the tournament that can match that type of production. And each of the other teams will definitely argue that their top line is as good, but the numbers bear it out that really no one can beat that top line that London is able to throw out there.
That's a tough one. Then you come back with the second line of Max Jones, Cliff Pooh, and Aaron Berisha. All of a sudden you're saying, well, that's a murderer's row of a top six. How do you handicap the goaltending in this one, Sam? When you look at the starting netminders, you already mentioned Ryland Toth of the Red Deer Rebels. What do you do with Jordan Paperny? What do you do with Tyler Parsons? What do you do with Chase Marchand? How do you handicap the netminding here?
Well, I'll start with Brandon. And Paperny is a guy that, you know, probably doesn't get the credit he deserves. You know, having said that, he's had pretty much one stinker in each of the series leading up to this. And in a tournament that's short, like the MasterCard Memorial Cup, you can ill afford to have a stinker. So that's something that you're going to have to worry a little bit about when it comes to the Brandon Wheat Kings. But, you know, they do have the puck a lot, the depth that we talked about is good. Their defense pairings are really good and really good at moving pucks up the ice and getting it out of their own zone quickly. Having said that, you know, Paperny's going to have to be at the top of his game like he was for 80% of each of the series he played in getting to this point. Chase Marchand is going to be tested, I think, more than what he was tested throughout the course of the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League playoffs. I think Shawinigan gave him a run there. He did get yanked in one of those games. But the six shutouts is, that's pretty tough to beat and would have, you know, had a sole possession of the record had they been able to close out that final game against Shawinigan, that game five, but they weren't able to do that. But the shutout streak of 223 minutes, 23 seconds, also a Quebec Major Junior Hockey League record. I think he's in to get a little more shell-shocked than what he's been, so he'll have to be at the top of his game, and the numbers bear it out that he likely will be when you look at his regular season numbers and kind of taking over that number one spot in the playoffs for Ruan Noranda. I'll go to the Red Deer Rebels, and that's probably the most interesting to me, is Ryland Toth was a guy who so often many people thought that Brent Sutter was going to make a deal. He did, and make a deal for a goaltender. He did not. And people were wondering if that was going to be the Achilles heel to his club's success. Now, Trevor Martin came in and played well, but when it comes to Toth, I'd expect him to be at full health. I would expect him to be fresh because he didn't play through the course of the playoffs, plus the two-week layoff. Having said that, sometimes for a goaltender, that type of layoff could be detrimental. So that's going to be an interesting situation when it comes to Red Deer and its goaltending. If you had to rank all of them, I'd probably put Red Deer in fourth place in that regard. Go to the London Knights. Tyler Parsons has had that kind of year where all he's done is rise and rise and rise. He's never really faltered. Dale Hunter has great confidence in him that if he's going to give up five in a game, he's going to stick right with his guy and give him an opportunity to battle through it. He's a real competitor and a guy who, again, really needs this tournament as a proving ground for the NHL draft. So I expect big things out of Parsons. And I've watched him a lot this year and just watched his game grow and watch how his teammates have rallied around him. If you had to rank them, you'd probably put London at the top of the list. So that's kind of how you handicap the situation. You know what, Jeff? We've kind of hit on two things, but I think this tournament's probably going to be decided by three factors. You know, the third line of each of the teams, the goaltending of each of the teams, and special teams, which is really no different than what you see throughout the course of the National Hockey League playoffs, maybe just a little more important when it comes to a short tournament format such as this.
You know, I want to go back to Red Deer for a second, Sam, because something that you said caught my interest. And, you know, there was that feeling that Brent Sutter and Red Deer was going to make a move for a goaltender. He already made a move with Swift Currents, with Jake DeBrusk. And so you wonder, well, how come, you know, Landon Beau ended up going to Seattle? That worked out great for the Thunderbirds. Do we look at Red Deer this year and say, you know, they waited for Brandon Hickey to make his decision, stay at BU or come out and join Red Deer? Do we look at Red Deer and say, you know, between the deal for Jake DeBrusk and Luke Phillip in from Kootenay, Adam Haluka as well, maybe they just ran out of things to trade before getting around to getting a goaltender? Would that be accurate?
You know what, Jeff? I'm not going to necessarily agree with that statement, and here's why. Brent Sutter's the owner, he's the general manager, and he's the head coach. So he pretty much has full control over whatever player personnel decisions are made in the organization. You know, having said that, they did go out and make a couple of deals. They addressed goal scoring, which was no question something that they needed to address, because what they had previous to getting Haluka, previous to getting Luke Phillip, and previous to getting DeBrusk, quite frankly, wasn't going to make the cut for a host team. Having said that, you go back to 2013 and being close to the Saskatoon situation, I think it was a much different situation in that Lauren Mullican knew he could sell the farm because new ownership was going to come in at year's end. And quite frankly, the old owners didn't really care what kind of mess they made left for the new owners. In Brent Sutter's case, the one thing he was adamant in not doing is selling his farm and putting his program at the very back of the bus once this tournament is completed. He feels that he owes it to his fan base, that he owes it to his city, not to sell out for one event, but to continuously be a contender in the Western Hockey League. You know, having said all that, though, Jeff, there oftentimes is once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to go out and win this event. And you saw it when it happened in Halifax, the celebrations that happened there. You saw it when you go back to 2011 when Kootenay and Mississauga and Owen Sound were playing and the St. John Sea Dogs climbed the mountain to finally get there and win. You saw it in 2014 when the Edmonton Oil Kings program got to the top of the mountain and the celebrations that those cities had for those respective clubs. She win again in 2012. I mean, it was unbelievable what happened there. So those opportunities only come along once in a lifetime. However, you're Brent Sutter. You already had that opportunity and took full advantage of it in 2001, albeit not as the host. So this does provide some uniqueness to a situation that Brent Sutter has already been through. But the one thing he was very adamant about is not coming back like Saskatoon, who's still trying to battle to get, you know, back into respectability. Under Bob Woods as the head coach and general manager there, Brent Sutter wasn't going to do that. He felt that he sold enough parts to address the goal scoring, that he would have enough puck possession, that the goaltending would be a mitigating factor. And, you know, well, I guess we'll see once May 20th rolls around.
Who are you most interested to see from a player's point of view specifically? You know, the player that you want to see on that huge stage, the one player that there's still question marks around, how is he going to revolve on the biggest junior hockey stage of the season? Maybe it's someone like Nolan Patrick, not scheduled to be drafted until next season. Who would be one or two of those guys, Sam, that's really catching your interest and you're really curious about seeing this time around?
Well, I'm going to take one guy from each team, and I'm going to start with the host team with Red Deer. Josh Maher is the guy that interests me the most. I'm pretty certain that I know what just about everyone on their team can do and can bring to the table. Not that they may not necessarily bring it because it is a short event. But when it comes to Josh Maher, who I thought going into this year was probably a guy who was going to work himself into the first round of the NHL draft. He's now, because of limited viewings, because of the injury that kept him out since game number two of the season, came back in the playoffs, played well, but there is more there. So when it comes to the NHL draft, he is, you know, the most interesting guy for me. When I go to the London Knights, Tyler Parsons, same reason. You know, he's climbed a huge mountain all year. He's worked himself into the third-ranked goaltender in North America. Does he have the ability now to vault over Carter Hart, Fitzpatrick out in Sherbrooke? Is he going to be able to overcome those guys and become the number one guy available in the Canadian Hockey League? I'm going to go to the Brandon Wheat Kings, and Nolan Patrick's the guy you touched on. I'll stick with him. I think he's a rock star. You know, at times, even in you look at what he did in games that Brandon won in the playoffs and the point production he put up versus games in which Brandon lost, and there's a huge, huge dichotomy there. So obviously, as he goes, so too do the Brandon Wheat Kings. And then I'm going to look at the last competitor, that's the Rouyn Noranda Huskies. Who am I most interested in seeing in that club? Well, that's a fascinating question. I keep hearing Jeremy Lauzon's not going to come back. I'd like to see him come back. He'd be a guy of great interest for me just because of the injury he suffered and how long he's been out. But let's just assume for a sec that he's not going to come back. So who's going to be my guy there? Wow, that's a great, great question. And I think the answer for me has to be probably A.J. Greer of the Colorado Avalanche. Second rounder, left Boston University, you know, hardly put up any points in his year and a half or 2.5 years there. Comes over and all of a sudden he's a rock star. He's an agitator. He's a goal scorer. He's got net front presence. You know, is he going to be able to do that against the same competition, against different competition than what he was provided in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League?
You know, interesting, and he plays on a line, too, with Martin Zirkals, who is a Maple Leafs prospect who has a lot of people talking. He's a late round pick. What can you tell us about Zirkals? because, you know, this Latvian, you know, people are talking about him as if he's a diamond in the rough, and the Maple Leafs picked one off in the middle rounds and they really stole one. It's a pretty hot line with Greer and Fontaine.
He's kind of a, you know, a Timoshov type guy, but I think Timoshov is more of a talented guy, has better talent, where Zirkles probably has better work ethic, yet still has talent. He's a smallish, skilled type of guy. He likes to get under your skin. He goes to dirty areas on the ice. So he is a guy that the Toronto Maple Leafs are definitely going to keep an eye on, as they are J.J. Pickenich, who I believe was a fourth rounder a couple of years ago, who not a lot of people know about, who they probably will know about, you know, come the end of this tournament. So he's, you know, definitely a man of interest there. But when getting back to Zirkles, I know he was a key piece for the Rouyn-Noranda Huskies, and getting him, I think, allowed them to stay without that second import player for most of the season. And ultimately, when it came down to it, there was only a couple of teams that could acquire Timo Meier because of that two-import rule situation. And as a result of Zirkles playing so well and them just keeping one import on their roster for most of the season, it allowed them to go out and get Timo Meier. So equally as important as what he brings to the table is the fact that he played well enough where they could keep that spot open and ultimately, you know, acquire that first rounder, which is a huge piece for Rouyn. And, you know, they're really going to appreciate Timo Meier here once we get to the big dance.
He's an outstanding player, first-round draft pick of the San Jose Sharks. Before we let you go, a couple more things, Sam. We didn't get a chance to chat about the finals in all three leagues specifically. Any surprises for you, perhaps the Ice Dogs not even getting a game out of the London Knights? So was it Shawinigan pushing back on the Huskies, whether it was, you know, Seattle outside of the one game, really not able to do much damage against the Wheat Kings? What surprised you in the finals for all three leagues?
I look at the first two games, and really, although they were outplayed badly in the overtime of both of those games, it was two lucky hops that allowed Brandon to win through. Now, that's not to take anything away from the skill of Tanner Kaspik, but the hop off the end boards in game one that we did, that Kaspik swoops in and deflects off the shaft of a stick, you know, a death play by him, but getting that hop, I think, was a bit of a lucky bounce. That's not to say that Brandon would not have gone on and won that game, but you know, you kind of hope for a better goal to end it in a game that I thought was owned by Seattle in the first 30 minutes and owned by Brandon the rest of the way. Same thing in game two. A hop off the skate of Ethan Bear on the Jace Howerluck shot from behind the net. You know, one of those two games, if the outcome is different and Seattle wins, I don't know, we might be looking at a game seven situation. It obviously didn't play out that way, and good on Brandon for showing its, you know, its true colors, its resiliency, and battling back from being swept out last year. When I look at the Niagara series against London, yeah, I was definitely surprised that they didn't get a game. But I think they were killed by the momentum of having that week or 10-day layoff in between them ending their third round and going into the championship. And more so than any team, it's the momentum. They needed momentum more so than any other team that was remaining at that point. So I think that stop in momentum really killed them. And then you go to the Rouyn-Noranda-Shawinigan series, and, you know, watching Rouyn-Noranda quite a bit throughout the course of the playoffs, I felt, Jeff, that their depth was going to be too good for Shawinigan. So that series there wasn't really any surprises for me there. You know, you had the goofiness with what happened in the rink, and that forced both teams to, you know, in the interesting scenario when they had to play the game that we did on the Sunday night. But ultimately, Rouyn-Noranda, I think, was going to win that series regardless.
Before we let you go, get one sort of wide brush thoughts. I've been through the regular season in all three leagues, playoffs as well, MasterCard Memorial Cup. That kicks off Friday with London facing off against the host Red Deer. What was most interesting to you when you look back at the entire season, before you begin the tournament, Sam, look back at the entire year, all three leagues, what was most impressive, what turned your head, what caught Sam Cosentino's attention more than anything else?
Well, you know, it was really just a pretty cool year that when you go back and you look at the top teams in the, you know, in the CHL's top 10, three of them are here. You know, Seattle was in the final. They weren't here, but they were in the top 10. I look at Niagara, they weren't in the top 10 and kind of came out of nowhere to place themselves there. But really, when you're talking about this group, you're talking about three of the best teams in the CHL, and it's not just that they ended up that way at the end of the season. It's that they were that way for most of the season. So it's kind of neat to see how, you know, teams play themselves out. You project teams to be, you know, to do certain things at the start of the year, and then they follow through on those projections. And that's kind of where we're at right now. And again, you know, talk about the entirety of the group. You can't forget about the Red Deer Rebels. They still get into the, you know, an opportunity to win the Eastern Conference. That didn't quite work out. But they have to be proud of the way they performed this year to get to that far. And by no means do they look like a sad sack host that so many people have been talking about, you know, over the last, you know, going back to Shawinigan in 2012. So I think Red Deer can hold its head high and feel like they belong with this group. And who knows, you get a game one win there on Friday night against London, and this entire tournament gets turned on its head, I believe.
Gets pretty interesting pretty fast. All right, pack your bags, Sam. We'll see you in Red Deer, my friend. We'll catch you in a couple of days.
Okay, look forward to it, Jeff. Take care.
That was Sam Cosentino, lead analyst for the CHL on Sportsnet, someone who covers junior hockey with a sharp eye on the Western Hockey League specifically. It's our good friend Joey Kenward, who joins me once again here on Junior. Joey, how are you today, sir?
I'm well today, Jeff. How about yourself?
Doing good. Looking forward to getting to Red Deer, 2016 MasterCard Memorial Cup. This is what we've built to all season long. And as I was mentioning to Sam a couple of seconds ago, looks like a really strong field. And that's, you know, the three teams, you know, one from the O, one from the Dub, one from the Q, the ones that went in the front door, the ones that won their league championships, they look really strong. But that's not a slight against Red Deer. Like, I don't think we're looking at a Saskatoon Blades type situation here where they just kind of want to get through the tournament and not embarrass themselves. How do you handicap Red Deer through all this?
Well, they're a hockey team that played very, very well during the regular season, and a team that primarily because the Brandon Wheat Kings had such a solid run heading into the playoffs, a team that very well could have won a WHL Eastern Conference title. So Red Deer was a team that loaded up at the Western Hockey League trade deadline, getting some key snipers from other teams, specifically their two top guns who have been their top performers in the WHL postseason through three rounds. But they're a hockey team that on paper might just have one thing going against them when it comes to their competition, and that's their depth. Teams like the Brandon Wheat Kings, the London Knights, and Rouyn-Noranda, they are all very, very deep teams that don't just depend on maybe two lines to get the job done scoring-wise or their top two defensemen to play well in both ends of the ice. But having said that, you never know what a week's tournament can do for a host team. And the Red Deer Rebels, who have Brent Sutter behind their bench, who has seen this movie before, winning a Memorial Cup title with the Red Deer Rebels, albeit way back in 2001, it will be a very, very difficult task for any team that plays Red Deer. Just saying that, it's going to be a very difficult task for the Rebels to try to be able to win this tournament in front of their hometown fans.
Some great points there, Joey. We think back to when Shawinigan hosted and everyone wrote them off, and there they were beating the London Knights in overtime to claim the MasterCard Memorial Cup. Let's drill down on a couple of those players you mentioned from the Red Deer Rebels, and we'll focus in on the three, Adam Haluka, Jake DeBrusk, and Luke Philp. Philp comes in, you know, veteran leadership comes in from Kootenay. Jake DeBrusk, first-round draft pick of the Boston Bruins, he comes in to score goals, and you want more offense from Adam Haluka as well, who comes in from Spokane. Who's impressed you the most out of this troika that Red Deer acquired around deadline?
Well, I was very fortunate to have done play-by-play in the Eastern Conference final between the Rebels and the Brandon Wheat Kings a couple of weeks ago, and Red Deer were as good a team on home ice as any in the CHL playoffs. They only lost two games through three rounds on home ice, but one of them was a key turning point game in the series against Brandon. After they had won big in game three, the Wheat Kings really took control of game number four and never looked back. But Adam Haluka had a very, very strong postseason performance for the Rebels. He was one of those players I mentioned acquired in a mid-season trade from the Spokane Chiefs. He led his team in goals with nine. That was fourth best out of any player in the Western Hockey League postseason, but he only scored six of those nine goals in his first six games of the playoffs. So had a tough time generating offense for Red Deer when really he was looked upon to be one of those key contributors. He had just one goal in that third round series against Brandon. But the San Jose Sharks draft pick is a real sniper, had 42 goals in just 53 games in the regular season. You know he'll have to be a major focus point for Brent Sutter's team if they want to win on home ice. Jake DeBrusk, another key player that was acquired in a WHL trade deadline move from the Swift Current Broncos. He put up 17 points in the playoffs and was on a roll when his team was eliminated, having collected points in seven straight. Here's a guy that was a 21-goal scorer with 44 assists, nearly a point-per-game player, well, more than a point-per-game player in the WHL this year, split between Swift Current and Red Deer. You know he'll be relied upon heavily to create offense. But the player that really impressed me the most, and really he shouldn't be impressing anybody right now because he's a top five NHL draft pick from his draft class, but Hayden Fleury, the star defenseman for Red Deer, who is a first round pick of the Carolina Hurricanes, had 9 points in the playoffs, 5 in the series against Brandon, and that's pretty impressive for a guy that doesn't put up a ton of points through the majority of his WHL career. He really looks like he's taken his game to another level. He'll be put into the spotlight in front of the hometown crowd, but the way he's been performing going into this Memorial Cup, I think he's a player that's certainly able to rise to the occasion and will enjoy being put into the spotlight in front of his hometown fans.
How much of a wild card for Red Deer is someone like Ivan Nikolishin? We talk about, you know, goal scoring and offense and more contributions up front. Sustained an injury early on, but then came back in the Brandon series. How much of a jump ball or wild card is Nikolishin here?
Well, considering he didn't score a goal in the playoffs, mind you, as you mentioned, due to injury, he only played 5 games for Red Deer in the postseason. You have to rely on a player that was your leading point getter in a Memorial Cup tournament, and that's what Ivan Nikolishin was for the Rebels in the regular season. Played every game, put up 31 goals, chipped in with 51 assists, and he scored big goals at big times, 11 power play goals, 8 game winning markers. He can be a difference maker. Now, this is new territory for him. He's never played in a big time tournament like this, and not knowing what this Memorial Cup tournament means to Canadians, sometimes you wonder what's going through an import player's mind when he steps onto the ice in a tournament like this. You're right, he could be a real wild card for this team, and that says a lot for a player that led his team in regular season scoring. He's had a couple of weeks off to regain 100% health. He's been in practice mode. He, more so than any other player, I think, inside that Rebels locker room, will be itching to get into a game when his team steps onto the ice this weekend.
What about, you know, one guy that whenever I watch Red Deer, I don't know what it is, but he's like a magnet for my eyes. Someone I always come around, you know, to watching, and I mean, outside of the big boys, of course, Evan Poli is someone that every time I watch him, I say, wow, there's really something there. Where are you at on Poli?
Well, right there with you. He's from Wetaskiwin, Alberta, so he'll have a lot of family and friends on hand for the tournament. This is a guy who the regular season had 16 goals, 14 assists. Wasn't, as you mentioned, one of those marquee names for the Rebels when you think of a team that was scoring on a regular basis. But he was awesome in the playoffs. Had 8 goals in the postseason for Red Deer, considering he had 16 in the regular season. That's scoring at a pretty good clip through 3 rounds of the playoffs. He's a guy that's not afraid to get it on the forecheck. He can make life miserable for opposing defensemen. And that showed by, you know, 73 minutes and penalties in the regular season for Red Deer. Sometimes in this MasterCard Memorial Cup tournament, there always seems to be, especially for the team that hoists the trophy, one of those players that kind of comes out of the woodwork, flies under the radar, and doesn't really seem to be in the conversation for a player that could be a game-breaker. I think Evan Poli is that exact type player that Red Deer will need. As we talked about earlier, they don't have the depth on paper than what the other teams in the tournament have. A guy like Evan Poli might be one of those players relied upon to be a key contributor and maybe chip in a little bit more so than even some Red Deer fans might be expecting.
Okay, let's get to the other WHL team, the one that won the championship, the Edmonton Cup, and that is, of course, the Brandon Wheat Kings. Safe to say, I mean, this is the main reason that head coach and general manager Kelly McCrimmon, Joey, said no to the Toronto Maple Leafs. I want to go back to Brandon. This is the year they've been building for a number of years.
Tons of weapons. They might be, you know, you can make a real strong argument that they might have more scoring depth than the London Knights, and that's taking nothing away from the OHL champs. But when you consider Brandon had 18 players with goals in the postseason, 10 of those players had 10 or more points. They didn't have one veteran forward on their team who was a minus player in the WHL playoffs. This is a team that, remember, last year was in the WHL final and was swept in the championship by the Kelowna Rockets. They learned from that. They were a hungry team from the get-go. They were a very impressive 7-3 on the road in the WHL postseason. That's as good as it gets for a team that's playing away from familiar surroundings. And they have a real balanced scoring attack, and they showed it through four rounds of the playoffs. They had a lot of guys put up a lot of points, but they didn't just rely on the top line or the top defensive pairing to get the job done. Kelly McCrimmon relied on many, many players to have his team go after their first ever Memorial Cup crown.
You know, and you wonder, too, how much, you know, if the Brandon Wheat Kings are successful, how much of it will be predicated on, you know, you mentioned, of course, the big boys up front, Patrick Harlech, Magali Quenneville, all these types of guys, Reed Duke. But you wonder how much of the success will be predicated on the performance of the top pairing D of Ivan Provorov and McCoy Erkamps. How much of a factor can those two be in this tournament?
Well, no question, that's as good a 1-2 punch as there is in Canadian Hockey League play at this particular point in the season. Ivan Provorov probably will be lacing him up full-time next season for the Philadelphia Flyers in the National Hockey League. He had 21 goals, 52 helpers in the regular season, and led the entire WHL in plus-minus at a whopping plus-64 rate. But I get the sense he's got even more to give in the playoffs. Didn't have a single goal in either of the Eastern Conference Final against Red Deer or the WHL Championship against Seattle. He did put up 13 points in the playoffs, so you know this guy can probably take it to another level. In the case of overage defenseman McCoy Erkamps, who wears the captaincy for Brandon, had a real good postseason. This is a guy that traditionally doesn't put up a lot of goals or a lot of points, but paired up with Provorov, he did very well in the playoffs with 4 goals, 14 points, and was a very, very impressive plus 24 in the playoffs for Brandon. So those two players have been rock solid offensively, but there's one name on the blue line that certainly has taken his game to another level in the playoffs, Jeff, and that's a guy a lot of NHL scouts will be watching over the next week in Red Deer, is blue liner Cale Clegg. This guy had just 6 goals in the regular season. He's had 6 goals and 9 assists in the playoffs. This is a guy whose stock has been rising over the past couple of months. So when you can have Provorov and Erkamps do what they've been doing all year, and Clegg, who's had an unbelievable second half, that might be the best threesome on the blue line of any of the four teams heading into the tournament.
You know, it's fascinating, too, with Cale Clegg. I remember the top prospects game. You know, one of the questions we all had is sort of, you know, what's become of Cale Clegg? You know, this powerhouse Brandon team, this was supposed to be, you know, the season where he really cemented himself as a legitimate first-round draft pick coming out of the Western Hockey League. Looks like the only defenseman getting drafted in the first round this year out of the Western League is probably Jake Bean in Calgary. What happened to Cale Clegg this year in your estimation? But you are right. After in the second half, he really did turn things around.
Yeah, just had a real slow start to the season for whatever reason. But boy, come after that top prospects game, and once his team really started to find its stride after the World Junior Championships, he really seemed to step up his game to the next level. And maybe because he was in a situation where he wasn't the go-to guy on the point when Erkamps and Provorov were doing their thing, now all of a sudden Clegg is probably getting a little bit more ice time, maybe not seeing the top-end forwards from the opposing teams. And then once he started to really start to click offensively in the playoffs for Brandon, he looked like a guy that really was ready to show that, hey, he should be in the conversation with other defensemen in the CHL to be in the first round NHL draft pick class. I don't know if he'll be there or not, but if he's able to carry on into the tournament in Red Deer, what he's done the last couple of weeks for the Wheat Kings in the WHL playoffs, he could make this team even that much more difficult to play against.
Definitely getting the viewings for sure. Before we let you go, Dre, one final question, and people have said before, Brandon has a great shot at winning this tournament. However, it might be undone by the goaltending. Where are you at on Jordan Paperny?
Well, 16-3 is his win-loss total in his last 19 games of the WHL playoffs. That's pretty good. He's played 49 WHL playoff games for the Brandon Wheat Kings. That's the most out of any puck stopper in that franchise's storied junior hockey career. His goals against numbers and his save percentage totals, though, don't reflect his win-loss difference. However, he has been a guy that if he hasn't had a good performance, he has bounced back and been one of the best players for his team to get back into a playoff victory. He only lost back-to-back games once in the WHL postseason, Jeff, and that was the first two games that the Wheat Kings played in round one against the Edmonton Oil Kings. He will have to be big against some of those high-end offensive teams, particularly London and Rouyn-Noranda, when they step onto the ice against the O and the Q representatives, respectively. But if the team in front of him can continue to keep scoring and keep playing well in all three zones in front of him, I think he's got a golden opportunity to hoist a second trophy for the second time in less than a month.
Paperny's first challenge, as you mentioned, Saturday against the Rouyn-Noranda Huskies, day two of the MasterCard Memorial Cup. Thanks as always, Joey.
Thank you very much. Enjoy the sights and sounds of Central Alberta starting on Friday night.
Highway 2, here we come. Can't wait for it. Thanks, pal. There's Joey Kenward, who covers the Western Hockey League and also, as well, covers off the Vancouver Canucks of the NHL. Our MasterCard Memorial Cup preview continues in moments. This is Junior.
Playoff MVP for this year goes to a young man who had an incredible 16 goals, 28 assists, 44 points. Our league MVP, our playoff MVP, Mitch Marner of the London Knights.
Welcome back to Junior. I'm your host, Jeff Merrick. Pleased to be joined now with a sharp focus on the Ontario Hockey League, our friend from Sportsnet.ca, Nate Sager. Nate, how are you today, bud?
Good, Jeff. Good.
Pleasure to have you aboard as always. Always good to talk OHL action with you. We have for a number of years, you and I. Want to drill down on the London Knights because, you know, we've seen some great Knights teams come and go. It seems as if this is the perennial powerhouse of the OHL. For the past 5 years, the green will be in the MasterCard Memorial Cup. We think of 2005, perhaps the greatest London Knights team we've ever seen. What a regular season. Beat Sidney Crosby and Rimouski in the MasterCard Memorial Cup final. How would you rank this year's edition of London against the one we saw in 2005 with the likes of Perry and Tremp and Savret and Boland and Prust?
I think I would rank them pretty favorably. Now, I know, obviously, the one first point of reference a lot of people come back to with that London team, Jeff, is the 59 regular season wins that they had that year, which I don't know if anyone will ever take a shot at that record in the OHL, even with three-on-three overtime and shootouts, which weren't a part of the OHL at that time. But, I mean, these Knights won 51 games. When you start to look at the playoffs, that's where it gets interesting. I mean, London, they each went 16-2. The goal differentials, you know, give or take an empty netter here or there, are about the same. And, and of course, that 05 night team, they had I think they had a five game conference final with, I think, I want to say it was the Kitchener Rangers, and that five game OHL final with the Ottawa 67s. And whereas these nights, I mean, it's, you know, three sweeps in a row against, well, you know, which, you know, two of the teams in the league and a Niagara Ice team that was much more veteran than they were when you look at the, you know, the top, you know, the rosters, you know, how many 19-year-olds. So, I think they rate pretty favorably. I was sort of thinking about, well, sort of, you know, producing on them for the website. And, I think this might be the best, you know, the most skilled team going into the Memorial Cup tournament since probably 13 with both Halifax and Portland. Like, that's the level that the Knights are on. Obviously, they still got to go out and prove it. I mean, we've seen teams be awesomely good in winning the league championship, and it just doesn't always necessarily come together at the Memorial Cup. I think back 2 years ago, it took Edmonton a few games to get going, and before they proved that they were the best team all along, and after Guelph had looked the part for the entire week.
You know, it's interesting with this edition of the London Knights because, you know, Nate, we focus so much on the big boys, and perhaps rightfully so, Dvorak, Tkachuk, and Marner, Jones, Pooh, Berisha, go right down the list. Do we undervalue how good this team is defensively? Like, I mean, Jacob Graves has been outstanding. Ole Olevi is a well-told story. He'll be a top 10 draft pick. And Victor Mete, one of the speedier, you know, puck-moving defensemen around the OHL. Do we undervalue the defense of the London Knights, Nate?
I think we do because, I mean, they were right up there in terms of fewest goals against in the regular season. And that's all playing in the Midwest division where you've got six games a year with Erie, you know, six games a year with Kitchener. Like, I really think it's pretty egregious that the goalie, Tyler Parsons, isn't even in the top three for goaltender of the year vote when he, you know, had an average down in the low twos and a .921 save percentage. Everyone would be like, well, it's easy to be on that team, but not really. Sometimes there's pressure because you might go 4 or 5 minutes without a shot. And they really seem to, you know, eventually rind off the defense when you can, you know, sort of throwing a guy like Brandon Crawley into that mix too. And they were really good at sort of just limiting how much zone time teams get. It's like you kind of like, they're kind of like the basketball team that doesn't give up an offensive rebound, right? It's like you get one shot, and you're done, and we're going back on offense now, and we're gonna have the puck for a while. Just how together they are, and just the transition from defense to offense and offense back to defense is what I noticed really set this team apart from even the really good night teams from 13 and 14. I just, how good Marner and Dvorak were at turning pucks over, coming, you know, back deep to help in the defense, and then just cranking it up again.
I want to get on that Marner Dvorak page here in a couple of seconds, but I do have to ask you. So 13 straight playoff wins, OHL record, best playoff run in OHL history, 9 of them on the road. Spectacular. How, Nate, did Owen Sound beat this team twice?
I know, that's one of the mysteries of the age. Well, I mean, Ryan McGill's a good coach. I mean, obviously a guy with a lot of playoff experience at this level, and I think he sort of just got the Owen Sound kids to just embrace the underdog mentality. You know, hey, guys, let's see if we can stretch this out. And I think maybe London, I mean, I maybe use the analogy that it's a little bit like the Carlton Ravens, you know, university basketball dynasty. You might be able to get something off of them early on in the playoff process. Like, I've seen Carlton play at the national championship, and sometimes it's like, okay, we're going to let you do your thing for a half, and then we're going to stomp you. Maybe it was like one of them had the guard down a little. Yeah, I just remember that Carlton in the national semifinal this year was tight at halftime in Dalhousie, and we're like, wow, Dal's playing them tight, and I'm like, no, Carlton's not actually trying. And then they went on about an 18-4 run in the middle of the third quarter, and it was, you know, like a Canadian university version of a Golden State Warriors game. Shannon will like that, I'm sure.
Yes. Love it.
yeah, I mean, I think they were just sort of, just get through that series as much as they can and just try to adopt a playoff mentality. It was a big part of that thing. Okay, so this is how everyone's going to try to play us, and they adapted to it. And I think that really helps, if you get a good first opponent in the OHL. And I mean, it can be luck of the draw. Sometimes you get that team that just, you know, they finished seventh because somebody had to, right? And they're just like, well, we're just here for the experience and the two extra home dates, and you walk right through them. But Oshawa got a good push last year from Peterborough because, I mean, you know, even though the Peace weren't up to playing, so they still were going to play hard because that's a rivalry. And Owen Sound's the same with London. They're in the same division. Owen Sound, you know, they make the jerseys with extra space in both shoulders for the chip, you know. So I think that was a really just good series, you know, Ryan McGill had Owen Sound buying into the whole notion that, hey, you know, everyone expects you to, you know, lose every game 10-0. You know, let's go out there and stretch the zone as best we can.
Let's get on the Mitch Marner page here for a second. The best way the best way that I've ever heard Mitch Marner described, this is from a scout who's watched him closely going back to when he played with Don Mills, the Flyers. He said, Mitch Marner doesn't make the right play. He makes the better play. You know, everyone has an idea of what the right play is in every situation. Marner doesn't do that, but he does something better that leaves you scratching your head and learning more about how you look at the game than anything else. How would you describe Mitch Marner?
Yeah, he just seems to have great acuity for seeing the ice and going out there and having the confidence to execute and be creative. And it's a treat to see that, because sometimes, you know, that has been the one knock on players, you know, coming up through the feeder league sometimes, is that they do sort of, you know, can be a little bit robotic by times. And I also think, you know, like, I mean, obviously there's so many questions about his build and stuff, but I always think, you know, he's just one of those guys, like, pound for pound, he's much stronger than he looks. I think it was nice to see that in that profile Dan Robson did on him. They're saying, like, hey, yeah, he might be 6, Yeah, he's not 6 feet tall, but they list him at, what, 6 foot 165, but he's, you know, just, you know, wiry, you know, so like built like a, you know, a whippet or something, right? I think he's learned how to, you know, get in and out of, you know, tight spaces very, very quickly. And, you know, when he gets the puck out of the tight situation, it, you know, he quickly, you know, gets it into space. And I mean, that's what just has made that line so amazing, is that they, you know, the puck movement, you know, is just so quick between the three of them.
It's been outstanding. Maybe the best line in all of the CHL, Dvorak, Tkachuk, and Mitch Marner. Before we let you go, Nate, as always, I mean, you have not just a sharp focus on the OHL, but also the Q and the Western League as well. How do you handicap this tournament?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's always interesting when it goes out west. For the longest time, like, Eastern teams used to just always kind of wilt a little when they went out there, and then, you know, the Taylor Hall Spitfires, you know, sort of, you know, they turned that inside out. I really do see London sort of stacking up as the favorite. You know, obviously the big game, I would, you know, draw the circle around and make sure you watch this one if you're only going to have time to watch one. Hopefully people have more time than that. All that, I mean, I know we're all, but is the end in London game, just because, I mean, the Weed team that can score a lot of goals, you know, they're fast and skilled. And, you know, Ivan Provorov against Mitch Marner, I mean, that's a nice matchup in the middle of May. I sort of handicap sort of London and Brandon probably as the co-favorites. I mean, I'll confess that I'm not as up on the two leagues to East and West of me as I would like to be these days, but that's where I see it. I mean, Lua and Naranda, I think we've learned from the past few years not to take the Quebec League champion lightly. Like, whoever comes into the queue seems to represent really well. Not since, I think, Moncton in 2010 have we seen a QMJHL champion that didn't have a good tournament, regardless of, you know, what the final result was.
That's certainly true. And, you know, that kind of looks like the way this thing is shaping up, headlong into each other, Brandon and the London Knights. Nate, always a pleasure, my good man. We'll catch up down the road. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Jeff.
Pleased to be joined now by Ruan Naranda forward Timo Meyer, first-round draft pick of the San Jose Sharks as well, getting set for the 2016 MasterCard Memorial Cup in Red Deer. Timo, thanks for doing this. How are you today?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm doing very well, and I'm guessing excitement is the call of the day. What's the mood of the team? You guys beat Shawinigan in five games, big celebration. At what point did you start to focus on what's coming up now in Red Deer?
Yeah, I think we were all really excited, and obviously the whole organization, that's the first championship for them, so obviously we're all really happy, and definitely had a great time enjoying it, but I know it's going quick, so we definitely, you know, we've got our 2 days to, you know, celebrate. And right now, you know, we're going back at work, and we started practicing yesterday. So definitely the focus is here again, and we're really excited to go to Red Deer.
For those that haven't seen your team, how would you describe the Huskies? What are your main strengths?
I think we're a really fast team. We have depth. And we're a team that plays really well defensively, and but offensively we can be really dangerous too. And I think we have a great team that really sticks together.
What was this team like before you joined? Like, when you would play against Ruan Naranda, what did you think? And then what did you think after the trade from Halifax to the Huskies?
We didn't play them a lot. I played them once when I was in Halifax. And I'm sure we lost 6-2, and you know, I was really impressed with the way they played, the way they played together. And for me, obviously, you know, getting traded there, I knew it's you know, I'm gonna come into a great team. So for me, coming here, it was really exciting. I you know, met all the guys. I could really tell they're really close, and you know, it was great chemistry in the team. So for me, it was just coming here and trying to help them better and help win the championship, what we did.
Huskies forward Timo Meyer joins me. I can recall talking to a QMJHL general manager just before Christmas, and I said, how do you see trade deadline shaking out? And he said, whomever gets Timo Meyer is going to be the favorite to win the Presidents and go on to represent the Q in the MasterCard Memorial Cup. Did you know at the beginning of the season, you know, what was going on in Halifax, and did you have a sense that you'd be moved at some point in the season?
you know, back to Halifax, obviously you try to not think too much, but definitely as it got closer to the trading deadline, I knew it could be a possibility to get traded, and that last year in junior. So I think it worked out really well, and definitely for me, it's an experience, getting traded. But I think it worked out really well for me.
Talk to us a little bit about your netminder, Chase Marchand, who's had to drill down and close games for you. It's always nice, and you'll need this in Red Deer as well. Always nice when you have someone that you know you can rely on between the pipes. What are your thoughts on your goaltender?
Oh, he's been great for us. I think he has helped us winning a lot of games, and he's definitely a guy. He's been in the league. He's been in a few teams. He was on waivers, and they picked him up. And I think he's just done a great job for us. As we move on to the Memorial Cup, he's going to be huge for us, and we're all really happy to have him on our team.
Along the way, Timo, and starting with Drummondville, which team gave you the hardest time in your estimation? Which was the toughest series for Rouyn Noranda this year?
I think we had a really good first series against Drummondville. We didn't give them a lot, and I think. Well, it was getting a little harder, and I think Moncton was a pretty rough series a little bit, where we faced some adversity. And, in Sherwin finals, we had a really good team, but I think what really helped us is the way we worked together as a team, that just the mood and the way our leaders were in our team. I think it really helped us facing some adversity, but I think, every playoff series has some up and downs, but I think we handled them really well.
I want to ask you about Jeremy Lauzon as well. Second-round draft pick, Boston Bruins. We know all about the unfortunate injury. The only update that we have is that he probably won't play. You may know differently. But what was it like seeing a player go through something like what Jeremy Lauzon went through?
Oh, it's always a shock. His injury definitely... It was really scary, but he's good now, and I think today actually it was announced that he's going to be back for the Memorial Cup. It's going to be huge since he's a great leader in the locker room, and obviously on the ice he's one of our top defensemen, so we can definitely use him against some of those great offensive players in the Red Deer.
So he's going to be back then. He's going to play.
I'm pretty sure he is.
That's fantastic news for the Huskies. One last question for you, and it's not so much about the Huskies, more about yourself, Timo. What was your draft day experience like? Did you have an idea that you were going to go to San Jose, or did you think you were going somewhere else?
It was a great experience, and funny thing is I never really thought San Jose was gonna pick me, because they kind of they were. Playing a little bit of poker face when I talked to them, and didn't give me, I didn't really think they liked me too much. But the draft day definitely a day I will never forget, and it was an awesome experience that I could share with my family, and it was just great.
It's been a great run for you personally so far. Halifax, was drafted by the San Jose Sharks, now into Rouyn Noranda. Some great future memories lie ahead starting this weekend at the MasterCard Memorial Cup. Timo, thanks so much for doing this. Much appreciated. We'll see you in Red Deer.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
That's Timo Meier, the Rouyn Noranda Huskies. They open up the MasterCard Memorial Cup on Saturday against the Brandon Wheat Kings. I want to thank Timo for stopping by. I want to thank all of our guests, Sam Cosentino, who drops by on every single podcast. I have to thank Joey Kenward as well, with a sharper focus on the Western Hockey League. Nate Sager put the microscope on the OHL, specifically the London Knights. And here we are, 2016 MasterCard Memorial Cup. The host Red Deer Rebels open up against the London Knights. It all begins Friday, 8 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central Time. All the action available on Sportsnet. Thanks so much for dropping by the podcast today. Next time we talk to you, we'll be on the Magic Eyeball. You can call it the television, Friday nights, as the MasterCard Memorial Cup begins. Best of luck to all the teams. Thanks to our producer, Sam McKee, for this podcast. And thanks for tuning in as well. We'll talk to you next time on June 6th.
sense of memory runs a river near all the trouble.
You've been listening to Junior, the podcast for CHL fans. Find us at sportsnet.ca. Even better, subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Where the ragged people go.